From Delray Beach, Florida, welcome to Life Change Weekend with Dr. Dino Padrone. Hear the stories of individuals who, through their conversion experiences, books written, ministry served, special truths from Scripture, or trips taken, tell their story. These stories and teachings are life-changing. So thank you for joining us, and get set for some life change. Here is your host, Dr. Dino Padrone.
Have you ever thought about being the President of the United States? Dave, I want to thank you for the introduction today, and I want you to know as listeners that we're talking with John Marshall. John is a pastor who retired, and he read 20,000 pages on all of the presidents from some of the classic works, Presidents of the United States. And we're talking about that because, you know, the foundation of America from the very beginning was a belief in the concepts that really have made America great. And the presidents are to fulfill those concepts. And so I'm so glad to have Pastor John Marshall on with us today. And in just a moment, we're going to be chatting with him. And I do want to remind you, join us Monday through Friday for our weekday Bible studies here, which is called Life Change Today. This is Life Change Weekend, where we hear the story and testimonies of many of God's people. John, welcome again to our program. We're delighted that you're on.
Thank you, Dino. It's such a pleasure to be back.
And John, you know, last week we got quite an education on presidents. We asked several questions, and it was great listening to your answers. Just give us a little survey of what we followed and covered last week.
I read the biographies of the presidents. There were 45 at that point, 20,000 pages. It was an intentional project to help me transition into retirement. I had been told that you have to have something to keep the mind always occupied. Somehow you've got to make that shift. And so that was my project. There would never be a time when I would say, well, what do I do today? I'd never be bored. And so I would always have a biography of a president with me. There is a site, bestpresidentialbiographies.com, that I used a lot. But I learned that the famous writers, they're famous for a reason. The McCulloughs, Meacham, Chernow, their books are just, they really were head and shoulders above the others. And so those were very helpful. It was great to study strengths and weaknesses of the presidents, to learn a lot of things that helped me myself in my own life. So I found it to be a very helpful project. It did help me successfully make the transition from the full-time career into my retirement.
And remind the people, as you did, spoke about it last week, about your ministry. You had quite a ministry there that God richly blessed.
Yes, I was pastor of what is known as one of the most missions-minded churches in the United States. It's Second Baptist Church in Springfield, Missouri. They have mission work all over the world and in the United States, in our state, and 18 partnerships in our city. And while I was there, in the last 7 years, we gave about $3 million to church planting, started 51 churches. The Lord did a miracle there. It was a great church before I got there. It's still a great church now, 5 years after I'm gone. It was just a work of the Holy Spirit and continues to be an amazing work of the Holy Spirit. Second Baptist Church in Springfield, Missouri.
And it's got to be a great delight to you when you get up on the Lord's Day to think about all the churches around the world that are preaching the gospel because they were impacted by you and that church. And I congratulate you on that. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing when you think of the gospel going out.
Thank you.
Let's talk today a little bit about this whole idea of effective leadership. When a president leaves the White House, I've often thought, I was president of a college. When I left the college, they made me chancellor. I asked him, first of all, what that meant to make sure I knew what we were getting into. But I'm happy to be the chancellor, but I don't really do a lot. But when I left, I kind of left it and went on to other things in my life. I often wonder when presidents leave, what should they do? Who were the most effective leaders after they left the White House?
This was one of the most fascinating part of the study, because all three of them were not that effective as presidents. The three most effective former presidents, this is remarkable. Number one is John Quincy Adams. He was not effective as the president, but when he came back to Congress after he left the presidency, he stood against slavery when nobody else would. He kept talking. He kept pushing. He's unparalleled in those years, the 1830 to decade or so after that. There was no one else who was clear, straightforward. Nobody matched John Quincy Adams after he left the presidency. Now, the second one is Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was not effective as our president. There are reasons for that. Number one, he was weak at delegation. And one of the things I had to do in reading these men, I had to put politics aside. I just had to read, just trying to figure out just personal details. And I've studied leadership my whole life, obviously. And so just trying to look at them analytically, trying to perceive what was going on. Mr. Carter was unable to trust others. And so he tried to do too much himself. And it just led to some weaknesses in his administration. And of course, that led to his not being reelected. But he had the bully pulpit, and he knew it. Then he started the Center for Peace down in Atlanta. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. It's incredible what that organization has done and has allowed the Jimmy Carter's influence to be worldwide. So that would be number two. Then number three, and this is the big shocker, and this is one of the problems of reading the presidents, the closer you get to the current day, the more careful you have to be about what you say about them. And so once again, I try to take them out of the context of the political battle and is trying to analyze it in terms of what their effect. The third one is Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. It's the Bill Clinton Foundation, which has been controversial and has, people say, has raised money in ways it shouldn't. I can't deal in that. That's not my forte. But I have to admit that the Bill Clinton Foundation has helped people all over the world. And once again, he was a man who learned the power of the bully pulpit. The great ex-presidents are the men who realized they were world movers, world shakers, and they continue to hold that influence, and they put in place mechanisms which allow that influence to continue. And that's what Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton both were able to do and do very effectively. Now, there is another one. There's one more. And I know I'm taking too much time, but I got to tell you one more. This guy is Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover, once again, terrible president, but yet saved Europe twice, after the First World War. And then Roosevelt wouldn't even mention Hoover's name except to berate him. But then when Roosevelt died, Truman became president. Somebody had to feed Europe after the Second World War. Hoover was the one that Truman called on and said, "You saved Europe once. We need you to save you again." They say he saved millions of lives. So those would be the four. But if I had to pick four, those would be the four I'd say they just stand out. There's none of the others stand out like those four do.
It's fascinating. I did not know. I knew that about Jimmy Carter, I guess, but the other three, I really was clueless on. That's fascinating. I know Jimmy Carter did a lot of spiritual work and humanitarian work after the presidency, and I can really see that with him, but it's very interesting. You're listening into Life Change Weekend. This is Dina Padron talking to you. I'm glad to have my good friend John Marshall on, who's done an amazing research project of reading 20,000 pages on the presidents. Last week and again today, we have had him on our program, and what a blessing it is to have him on. John, thanks so much for coming on. We have been advertising last week and again this week my newest book called Leadership Lessons from the Pastoral Epistles. There are over 200 pages here, over 90 works that are cited, taking 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, and the book of Titus. And to get your copy, simply go to our webpage at dinopadronministries.org, and you can get your copy there. All the details are there. And we trust this book will be a help to leadership in a church and pastoral leadership. And maybe you want to get a copy for your pastor, or pastors may want to get a copy for their leadership teams that they have in the church. We believe it will be helpful. Leadership lessons, we go through all the verses of 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus, and then we draw out some leadership lessons. Now, let's talk about this, John. This is a fascinating thought, really, but what were the best three in a row combinations of presidents? There's an old story I heard one time. a man wins an office, everybody's excited, the bands are playing, and then when he goes out, the concept is we got to get rid of him, we get somebody new in. And sometimes they go in totally different directions. What is the best three in a row combination that from your research?
That's pretty easy to answer. There are two that stand out without any doubt. And the importance of three in a row doing well is because it allows stability among the people. People mm-hmm. are calm. People were at rest. People feel safe. The first triumvirate was Virginia Dynasty, Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe. There were ever three peas in a pod, it's them. Except Monroe did, just before his he was elected, he was elected, and before his inauguration, he read John Marshall's biography of George Washington and realized that he and Jefferson and Madison had been overly critical of Washington. And Monroe did begin to change some of the things that Jefferson and Madison had taught. And that's why we have the era of good feeling. He was the Republican, that was the Democrat Republicans, they were called then, but who was also a Federalist because of his reading of Washington. So he combined the two in the best traits of both. And that's why you have that era of good feeling under Monroe. But there's no doubt for 24 years, Americans knew what was going to happen. They felt comfortable. They felt safe. They felt like no big surprise is coming. The second triumvirate is FDR, Truman, and Eisenhower. Those three men, people felt like somebody was in charge. You might like them, you might dislike them. You might politically, you might be opposed to them, but yet you knew that in the White House. So from the election of Roosevelt in 1932, and he took over in 33, until the beginning of Kennedy's term in 61, you have about 28 years there of just good, solid leadership. And that was another time when Americans felt, okay, we know who the leader is. We know what we're doing. Roosevelt and Churchill, I know you're a reader of Churchill. Roosevelt and Churchill saved Western civilization, as we know it, whatever else you like or don't like about them. Truman, basically, the most surprising of the great presidents, Harry Truman. And then Eisenhower, so steady. And now Eisenhower's star is rising. Oh, my goodness. He's coming up in the ranks as papers become public of how he saved the world, kept from nuclear war, the interstate highway system. As we're learning more about Eisenhower, we're learning that, wow, this guy knew what he was doing. So those are the two triumvirates, I would say. Those were the two times that Americans had a generation. You kind of felt like you knew what was going on, and even though you might not like them politically, you felt safe. So those are the two.
Mm-hmm. I read a biography on Eisenhower maybe a couple of years ago, and I think this is what the author said. It was something like this, but that was the golden presidency of the 20th century. Would you agree with that, or would that be... I remember as a child being raised, and he was the president, and what you just said is exactly how I felt. I felt safe. And it seemed like shortly after that, it was very insecure in the country. But would you say that about him, or was that maybe FDR? What would you say?
I would say that Eisenhower, everybody liked Eisenhower. You know, his campaign slogan was, "I like Ike." Mm-hmm. And that was maybe as true a campaign slogan as everybody liked Eisenhower. He just friendly. Just knew how to get along with people. That's why the Allied commander, he was made the Allied commanders. There were 10 or 12 of those guys that could have had that job. They picked him because he got along with people well, because they felt he could handle those personalities. And yes, and now as we're learning more and more about how his Joint Chiefs of Staff and his leaders wanted us to drop an atomic bomb on China in the Korean War, and this stuff is starting to come out now. And Eisenhower saying, well, no, I saw the after effects of one of those bombs and stood his ground, basically stood alone among military counselors that saved us an atomic war. And then the interstate highway system, nobody knew how important that was going to become to the infrastructure of the United States. I mean, you can't even imagine America without the interstates. So, yes, Eisenhower, there was this time period. And, of course, you know, he's the only president that was baptized. While president, he became a Christian right there when he was first elected. And then he started his first inaugural address with a prayer. It's a famous picture out there with Nixon sitting right behind him as the vice president and Eisenhower leading in prayer as he begins his inaugural address. So, yes, the Eisenhower years were good years.
Yeah. So Jefferson and Madison and Monroe, FDR, Truman and Ike. That's I can see that as you're sharing that. You're listening into Life Change Weekend. We're having a fascinating time together with John Marshall. John has done a wonderful research that we are all blessed to be a part of as we listen to this today. If people want to get hold of you, John, if somebody may have some questions about the presidents, is there a way to do that, or is that kind of not something you have set up yet?
Oh, no, I'm glad for them to do so. I'm john316marshall@gmail.com.
That's really easy to remember.
And then my website is john316marshall@com. john316marshall.com. john316marshall will just about catch me somewhere.
Yeah, it's true because I've done that. I've done that, John. Very good. Now, John, let's talk a little bit about, we've asked some questions here that I think are not in the norm, and you and I discussed this beforehand, so we really could stay on target with the things that you've learned. But often we say, this was the greatest president, or this was the number one president. How long after a presidency does it take to determine a president's effectiveness?
Truman said 30 years, and I agree. I can honestly tell you that the last book, or the last biography I've read of a president that I felt, this is definitive. This is serious stuff. This is a true biography, was Meacham's biography of George H.W. Bush. And it's so interesting. George H.W. Bush's term ended 30 years ago. I just found that to be fascinating. Of course, it was about 4 years ago when I finished reading the books, and I thought, isn't that interesting? Truman said it takes 30 years. And here I am finishing this series of having read all these 45 books. And I look back and I say, which one do I feel this is a level, Pulitzer level? And by the way, he spoke at George H.W. Bush's funeral. That's how close he came to the Bush family. But so I think Truman was onto something. I think it takes a long time. Like, for instance, like right now, Eisenhower, we're 60 years removed. And we're just now really watching his star rise. But I think Truman was onto something when he said the 30 years is about what you have to do. I think he was onto something.
So with Presidents Clinton, G.W. Bush, Obama, and Trump, we really can't tell because they're under that 30-year limit. And that does make sense, doesn't it, that 30-year limit?
Well, let me tell you why that is. We're too angry and hot and upset about certain issues.
Yeah.
That caused us to lose sight of everything else. Mm-hmm. And we are emotional people, and we do need to be upset, and we do need to be driven in what we do. I understand that. But it's hard to see the accomplishments behind a person because we're so emotional about the one or two religious issues, spiritual issues. No president has ever been as great as his best supporters say he is, and no president has ever been as bad as his worst detractors say he is. It goes both ways, and so it takes time for us to let the emotion kind of calm down a little bit, and then let's look a little bit more carefully at what he did domestically or nationally, those kinds of things.
And John, this is not something you and I really talked about, but in your view of our country and the presidency and so forth, how Christian was our nation to begin with? Because I've read a good bit of material on that, and there's all kinds of some things I've heard said that just aren't accurate. There's no background to it, and others that are seem to be right on target. How Christian was this nation as it began?
We would be better served, you know, to say, ask the question, how biblical? Everybody loved the Bible, even Jefferson. You know, Jefferson, when he was vice president, was the superintendent of schools for Washington, D.C., and they taught the Bible. So Franklin adored the Bible. You know, they all loved the Bible. The Bible was driving everything, and this is how they thought. They had seen, though, through history, how the Christianity can turn its own, not only on everybody else, but turn its own. And they were determined not to let any organized religion be established. It wasn't going to happen. They were not going to let that take place. And therefore, they were extra careful. They bent over backwards to make sure they never said anything that seemed to show favoritism to Christianity as an organized religion, even though all of their teachings, all their understanding, and the whole system of our government is based on the Bible. In fact, the Brits, they called us the Presbyterian government. They're Episcopal, you know, they're ruled from the top. They felt that the Presbyterians and their elder leadership, representatives leading the people, they made fun of us, saying, y'all are just the Presbyterian group. And so it's so interesting how the outsiders were looking and saying, well, you've adopted a certain church method as your method. So in one way, you can say, yes, the Christian thought, the Christian way of thinking was definitely driving things. But then on the other hand, you have to say, no, the Founding Fathers did not want any established religion because they had seen what groups who call themselves Christians could do. That's a long answer to a short question, but I think that pretty much succinctly says it.
I like that, the biblical view. I like that a lot, John. John, we're not really just about out of time. We got about 2 minutes left here, and we have other questions. But I want you to, if you would just say a word here to our listeners. There are many people that listen who don't live in America. Some are new to America. With our new online programming that we have, we go to many places around the world, for which we're thankful. I know you love America. Just give a word of how you look at the United States of America and the freedom that we do enjoy here.
We're like a fish in water. They say a fish probably does not know it's in water.
Hmm.
And we are so surrounded by the freedoms, the liberty, the teachings that, because we believe that human beings were created in God's image, that are so Christian, whatever you want to call it, biblical, you can say what you want to, it so permeates us, we don't see it. Now, so America is a great land. We have a lot of sin, though. We understand that. And we have a lot of failure. And we have sometimes, because of our greatness, become egotistical and have a better-than-thou attitude. And so we have things that have haunted us, and the slavery issue. Those are all things that we realize we are not perfect. But there are some beautiful things that are true of our land, of our nation, that other countries would give anything to have. And most of that does come out of our understanding that every human being was created in the image of God. The question in America now is going to become, as we move away from our biblical belief, as we become less religious, as we become less spiritual, can we still hold on to the beautiful thing, or will the beautiful thing go off into the sunset as we let the religious background of it go to the sunset? That's where America is. We're trying to answer that question right now.
Great stuff. Our time is really up, but real quick, if you were to name three of the top presidents, three of your favorite, who are they?
Washington, Lincoln, and then it gets murky. You almost have to say FDR, Dino. You know, FDR had his problems. He has, because we know that. We understand that. But as you know, being a Churchill fan, literally, FDR and Churchill saved Western civilization. That is not an overstatement. You know that.
Yeah.
I know that. And I think that's enough to put him right there with Washington and Lincoln.
Fascinating stuff. This has been fascinating, John. What a blessing to have you on. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us. Our listeners, I'm sure, have been intrigued by this. Give your address one more time if somebody wants to contact you.
john316marshall@gmail.com. john316marshall@gmail.com.
Thanks so much, John. Great having you on. Blessings to you and your dear wife and all that you do. Remind you, we are on Monday through Friday with our Bible study. Make sure you join us. If you want the book Leadership Lessons from the Pastoral Epistles, simply go to our webpage at dinopadronministries.org. Have a blessed weekend. Join you again on Monday. Take care.
You have been listening to Life Change Weekend. Life Change is brought to you through the International Dino Padron Ministry, which includes radio, television, live stream programming, podcasts, literature, online education, the support of indigenous ministries, and progressive approaches to help people grow their faith. To receive our complimentary monthly newsletter, send your postal or email address to dinopadron@gmail.com. or dinopadroneministries.org. That's dinopadrone@gmail.com or dinopadroneministries.org. Stay tuned to our weekday Bible study, Monday through Friday. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be with you next week on Life Change Weekend.